Station on the ground reporting. News as it happens. Yeah! Here I am, your main man, reporting from Jam Jam. At 16,000 kilocycles FM and 1,000 megahertz on the ground. Yeah!
Hello, my name is Ginger Feldman from High and Mighty Therapeutic Riding and Driving Center, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Hi, everybody. My name is Daniel Thomas Wachowski. Tune in to the local news for better weather, interviews with your friends and neighbors, and more on WGXC from 7 to 10 every morning. WGXC is here to start your day with democracy now at 8. Tune in weekdays to 90.7 FM to get your morning going.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marxist of Ghent, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm trying to get the people saying frequency.
As you bird know, beginning with the meadowlark. The lively song of the song sparrow. Red-winged blackbird. The western quail or bobwhite. Song of the linnet. The cardinal redbird. Our home canary. Sad little song of the woodbird. and the mockingbird who can imitate them all.
You're listening to Waveforms WGXC, Accra 90.7 FM. This program is Bequency, and my name is Mayuko. Bequency invites the local community to be inspired by the joy, beauty, and wisdom bird enthusiasts find in the nature of our own neighborhoods. Every episode features an interview with local bird people, plus a free-form mix of sounds made by birds and human inspired by birds. We started today's show with a tune by Margaret McKee, the queen of whistlers from 1920s. She was known for her particular skill as an imitator, an impersonator of birds. You know, it seems like there are some people out there who can imitate birds, bird sounds really well, who could even like trick on a bird identifying app, Merlin. I was at one of the bird walks led by Larry Fetterman yesterday that took place in Catskill at the Ramshorn Livingston Sanctuary. And Larry Fetterman is one of those people who have very good ears and attentive minds, and I just love how he helps participate to listen, like really listen, and I really feel like it's the best way of spending time with other people, to just kind of like stand still together and just try really hard to listen to things around us. By the way, if you're in Greene County, Larry Fetterman leads a lot of bird walks, so if you're in this area, I recommend you look him up online to find more information. There's some upcoming walks and talks in Cairo and Mountaintop Arboretum, in Tannersville tomorrow. Today it already happened, I'm sorry. But there are a lot of information you can find about his events online, so I recommend you just look him up. Anyhow, so we're going to hear a few more tracks by this artist, Margaret McKee, and her whistling art. So stay tuned for that. Thanks for listening. This is Bequency. Thank you. We heard two tracks by Margaret McKee called, the first one was called Songbird, and then Bird Raptures. These tracks were all from the compilation titled Queen of Whistlers, November 1920 to May 1929. The compilation came out this month from Canary Record Label. It's a brand new release. And in the release notes, it says The American cultural phenomenon of a woman whistling in public was part of the feminist movement at the end of the 19th and early 20th centuries that led to the 19th Amendment of the Constitution that in 1920 included women as a voting constituency. Whistling in public was one of the innumerable social restrictions placed on women for over a century in the U.S. The women who broke with those conventions were joining a social movement towards liberation that was gradual, complicated, and spanned many generations. That's what it says in the release note. I didn't know there was such a political aspect to whistling, so it was very interesting for me to learn about this. And, you know, also to learn the fact that there was such a thing as the California School of Artistic Whistling. I was kind of joking about Cornell Lab of Ornithology should have an online course, online course of bird imitation, like whistling bird imitation course. Apparently, it's not that much of a crazy idea. You know, people like Larry Fetterman, I mentioned in my previous mic break, and people like Will Yandick, who appeared in the Backyard Bird Count audio report that I did in February. Those people who are very good at listening and good at reproducing sounds, they can teach it. We already have, like, the instructors ready to go. So, anyhow, this political thing about whistling made me also think of the fact that I didn't know there was a political, almost like an activism aspect to birding until I learned about the New York Breeding Bird Atlas. So this New York Breeding Bird Atlas, it's a citizen science project that aims to build an inventory of all the birds breeding in New York State. And participants can install an app on their phone that's called eBird. It's an app that makes it easy to record bird sightings and observations, and you can submit them to the New York Breeding Bird Atlas database from your phone. It's pretty simple once you learn it. And so for today's episode, I spoke with Wendy Tachi, the regional coordinator for the New York Breeding Bird Atlas. Wendy shares how to join Atlas, discusses the joy of appreciating everything around you through atlasing, and also with a nighttime birding tip. I hope you enjoy it. Let's listen to the interview. Thanks for listening.
Could you introduce yourself a little bit?
Yeah, I'm Wendy Tachi. I'm the regional coordinator for the New York Breeding Bird Atlas for the Hudson region. I live in Kingston. I've been here for 20 years, more than 20 years, actually. Yeah, I was at, I went to school at UVM. Then I moved to Washington, D.C., and then I moved to Baltimore, and then I moved to Brooklyn, and then I moved here. We were kind of like, the city was expensive. We had a bad living situation. We weren't making money. And like, I wanted to go to Vermont, and my partner was like, and had friends around here and grew up in Millbrook, so this was an easy place to come to. And it's like close enough to like nature, and so it served us well. I feel like I started birding more maybe like 10 or 11 years ago, or 12 years ago for the Christmas bird count. And then I started hanging out with John Burroughs Natural History Society. I've been birding with them for years and years, but really, like, I think just joining up with John Burroughs got me more into it. Mm-hmm. And there are always field trips, and everyone's like super helpful and friendly and enthusiastic. So, you know, doing field trips with them, and then just like all the citizen science projects. So, like, I don't feel like I'm like a professional like scientist or conservationist. I'm more just like the citizen science aspect of it is really easy to do and really enjoyable.
I guess it's just the sound of the science, and even the citizen science feels like you have to have some skills or experience.
Yeah.
But I think that's the great thing about New York Breeding Bird Atlas. So I want you to explain briefly what, I mean, it's a big project, so I don't know how brief it can be.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, I mean, the principle is basic. It's surveying like the breeding birds of the state of New York. This is the third Breeding Bird Atlas. It lasts for 5 years, and they're done every 20 years. And this is the third one. So just people with birding experience go out and observe bird behavior and then record what they're seeing. So do you know if a bird's singing, that's a possible breeding code. If you see a pair of birds in suitable habitat, that would be a probable. And then if you see something like bird carrying food, that would be a confirmed breeding code. So just as you're out birding, you make your eBird list. That's like a great thing to be able to use eBird, because then everything is like in real time. There's no like filling out cards and having someone else do data entry. So you get a really like real time picture of what's going on as people are entering data. State is split up into blocks, and I think there are over 5,000 blocks, but only some of those are priority blocks. Using the USGS topo quad and breaking it down into 6 blocks, and of those 6, 2 of them are priority blocks for every quad. It's the northwest block and the central east block. So we're focusing on the priority blocks. That way we can get even spread across the state. Mm-hmm. So the most valuable thing is to find a priority block and to go and atlas in it.
Mm-hmm. So people just go into priority blocks and sit there and see if the birds are breeding.
Yes.
Make just that observation. of if the birds are breeding or not. And that tells us the transition of population and basically how the species is doing over the course of, you say this is the fifth,
this
the third time.
The third.
5 years each.
Yep. So 1980 was the first, 80 to 84, then 2000 to 2004, and 2020 to 2024.
So we've already have the picture of over the course of half century.
Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. eBird is pretty simple.
Yep.
Once you start using it.
Yep.
And so it did feel like the bar has gotten lower to get in. And I mean, I was feeling a little confused by all the breeding codes and stuff until I got trained. I guess I'm still a beginner birder in the sense of, like, I don't know, when I see the breeding behavior, I might not be able to necessarily tell. But I feel, like, less pressured. Like, one of the things we were doing in Columbia County was Kathy was really urging us to go check out Woodstock. Woodcock. So I watched the YouTube videos of Woodcock. And then, you know, this is how it sounds like. This is what they're going to do. This is the time of the day that they would do this. So let's, like, just try to find that one thing rather than trying to figure out what's going on, like, everything that's going on in one spot, but rather, like, I'm going to really try to find Woodcock.
Yep.
And it's, like, a little bit of a, what do you call that, like, a scavenger hunt almost.
Yep.
So it really made it more fun and felt less intimidated to involved in the science thing. Because I guess the part of the intimidation is really, like, I don't know if I can make the right decision, right judgment.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm categorizing breeding codes correctly.
I mean, there are some tricky things, but good thing about it, like, you know, you could be, some people, like, I think it's one point in the past, like, you know, you're out to just tick off birds. Like, oh, I saw this bird, this bird, this bird. You see the bird, you know, you tick it off, and then you move on to the next. And you're not really, like, paying attention to, like, what it's doing or what's going on. And I feel with the breeding bird atlasing, you're just, like, slowing down, and you can allow yourself to take the time to really watch what it's doing, like something you wouldn't normally do. And then, you know, they're resident breeders, so, like, when I'm out atlasing, I'm like, oh, there's that yellow warbler I saw the same spot last week. You know, what is it doing this week? So you kind of, like, it's like you're
neighbors.
The neighbors.
Yeah.
You're like, what are the neighbors doing? And you can just, and if you watch long enough, they're usually doing something with breeding in the summer. They're busy. Maybe in some ways, maybe you're learning even more, too, if you're atlasing.
So your job is a regional coordinator. Like, what exactly do you do?
So myself, and Ann Swaim, we're co-regional coordinators for the Hudson region. So we kind of, like, oversee counties in the Hudson region. So, like, Ulster, Dutchess, Orange, Sullivan, Putnam, Westchester, Rockland, and Columbia County. So we answer questions. We assist. There's a sign-up map online. So we'll check that and sign people up. We'll give talks and walks. Yeah, that's, like, pretty important, like, the engagement part, like, getting people interested and getting people to, like, go, you know, do some atlasing, take on a little bit more. We do block review. Obviously, that's picking up more now because we're a little bit further into the study. So you want to get blocks completed. So we have to review blocks for different criteria. Have they been visited over 20 hours? Like, have all the habitats been visited? Are, like, all the species represented? And we have to get 45 probable or confirmed species in a block.
Checking how it's going, the progress of each block.
Yeah. Oh. And you can kind of, like, look at a block. You can also, like, if people don't want to, there are people who sign up for the block, but if that's too intimidating, someone could just say, hey, Wendy, what do I need to do? And I could say, well, if you go to this block, it's not complete yet, but if you go, you know, these are some species you can look for, or just go and code as many as you can.
I think during the training, I was told that if you want you can be the, what's the word, the basically the person who owns this block.
Yeah.
The term again? Like a priori.
The principal atlaser.
The principal atlaser. You can be principal atlaser. Yeah. And then I was like, I don't think I can. Like, I don't think so. It felt too much like.
Yeah, it was.
Too much of a responsibility that I don't think I can meet. But yeah, I think one of the things that really made me feel easy about it was that just do however the amount you can, whatever the time you can take. If you're a beginner, there's you can do as a beginner. If you're experienced, then obviously there's more you can do. But everybody, only if you're interested, can do something, and everything adds up to the atlas. And that was kind of encouraging thing. So that leads to the next question of, I thought it's got this like activism aspect of birding that I had never thought about before learning this. Even to have an opinion or to vote in local policies or what kind of development you want in your own town, you don't want the nature to be destroyed, or you don't want the bird's habitat to be destroyed. And you have to have a solid data to back up, you know, this development is not feasible because of this and this and this data. Like, it's not an anecdotal. The development has to happen in some places.
Yeah.
People have to run their business, or economical development is equally important, but really the matter of what's the right way to do it. And so I was not aware of that, you know, aspect of birding. I'm just like, took up this hobby casually, and it was all just about going out and see birds, and that's nice. But it actually can be part of activism. A lot of people are eager to take actions about what's happening in our community.
Yep.
So yeah, if you have any thoughts on that.
You know, like all these citizen science projects that we do, like all this data, it's like from citizen science. Like every time you put something into eBird, all the Christmas bird counts going back like years and years, like breeding bird atlases that take place in all over the states, like all of that contributes to like the data and the knowledge so that we can make informed decisions about like how we manage environments. So like a few years ago, there was this big study, like 3 billion birds gone. It was like in 2019. Like all of that data came from breeding bird surveys and citizen science surveys. And it's, you know, it's over a span of years. So you can really tell from like 50 years ago to today what has happened. And the thing that stood out to me most, so, you know, 3 billion birds lost, waterfowl species are doing okay because the wetlands are being managed to support their populations. So that's like a success story. That's the kind of thing this data can inform. I mean, like bald eagles and osprey and raptors with like the DDT, now that it's banned. The study's not over, but like you can go and look at the map on the website, on the Atlas website, and see like where the bald eagles are now in comparison to where they were 20 years ago. And there's like a really big difference in the map. You can see all up and down the Hudson confirmed breeding and nests, and that's because we took action to ban DDT, and like it works. So it's like kind of hopeful in a way.
Is there any specific things that's happening as far as you know around here, like say like somebody's trying to build a solar panels?
You know what, there is this has just come up, Blue Chip Farm, which is in southern Ulster County near the Shwangunk grasslands. It's a horse farm, and they're talking about being developed. So I know there was like a meeting like last week, and I think people are going to be on that. It's this old airfield. In the summer, it's filled with like bobolinks and grasshopper sparrows and meadowlarks. And in the summer, it's like migration spot for like northern harrier and short-eared owl. And it's just really nice, and this farm butts up against it. That is a pretty hot issue at the moment.
So are the citizens bring up this data from the bird atlas?
I'm not sure at this point like how they would use that. The fact that it's next to this like kind of sensitive preserve area.
But in that situation, definitely there's some information that they can.
Yeah. Overall, like grassland bird species are not doing well. So that could definitely play into the equation.
Developers willing.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's going to go forward. Maybe there's some concessions that can be had.
Okay. So we are doing this interview on the day of Big Sit in Kingston Point. This particular point is to raise funds for the New York Breeding Bird Atlas.
Yep.
How would the collected funds be used? And how can listeners support Atlas in addition to donation?
Yeah. So the funds raised will be used to, there are staff and IT expenses and office expenses and event expenses. We're also hiring people to do some targeted atlasing and some priority blocks that are not getting a lot of attention in the Adirondacks specifically right now. They're pretty under atlased, so there is a need to have techs go out and do that. So when the study ends, there's also like a number of years where the data is going to need to be analyzed and a book will be produced. So any funds raised go towards all of that. And outside of, you know, donations are great, but biggest thing would be to go out and atlas in a priority block. You could take ownership over, become the principal atlaser, or asking the regional coordinator, like, where you could go if it's too much to, like, go to the website and try to figure out what priority block needs help. Mm-hmm. But that's really big. We have 2 years left, so we really need people to, like...
Involved now.
Get involved now, yeah.
I found it really helpful to get the training.
Yep.
So if people wanted to join training like that, can they contact you?
Yeah. Yep. They can contact me or any other regional coordinator near them. All of our email addresses and like where we cover is on the website. And there are walks already scheduled. And there's a calendar on the website where you can see if there's a walk near you. A lot of the walks or talks I've done have been in conjunction with John Burroughs Natural History Society, but I put it on the Atlas calendar as well.
Okay, so people can find those information at the Atlas website.
Yep.
So this question is a little bit more personal, I guess. What is your favorite local bird? Could you describe what it looks and sound like and give us a tip on how to find it?
Yeah, I don't even think I have a favorite bird. Like, I can't even, like, it changes from day to day. So, like, I really enjoy hearing robins when I wake up in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And robin is a very common bird. And it just, there's some like deja vu like thing with my childhood. You know, I wasn't like, didn't know a lot about birds then, but like I knew the robin and I knew when I heard it and it was like early in the morning before anything started to go, you know, anything started to get busy or it started to get noisy. Not that robin's my favorite bird, but it's like, what time of year is it? What day is it? What was like the last bird that I heard or saw? So that's not really much of an answer. But also with like this atlasing, and now that I'm like looking at things differently, then I see like some crazy like courtship behavior. Like last year I was looking at grackles more closely, and they do this like weird thing where they kind of like hunch their backs and they're on the ground and they start sort of like waddling. And I mean, that was like crazy. Like, why didn't I ever notice that before?
Uh-huh. Yeah, robin. People don't really need a tip to find robin.
No, no. I think most it's just like appreciating everything that's around you.
You know, you said that some blocks are not covered so well. And I also heard in the training that the people are not so much out during the night, doing the birding at night for a very understandable reason. But I bought a night vision monocular.
Oh, cool. Lately.
And so I was thinking, maybe I want to like go out and try this thing.
Oh, yeah.
The problem is I don't know what to look for and I don't know like what to be careful about. Like, I was told that maybe I should be careful of a bear.
I feel like humans are more
threatening.
More threatening than a bear. There was one recommendation of like driving, stopping and listening, and then driving a little more. But like, I actually just like to like find a spot, park, can get out and walk.
Yeah.
Because you hear more, like, really you hear stuff at night more than you see. Like, if you're standing near your car, people are going to stop and they're going to be like, are you okay? And, like, you don't really, you know, like, that's nice, but you don't want them to
stop. You don't
stop.
Want any attention like that.
That's my take on that, is just to, like, get out and walk. And you hear things. Like, if there's, like, a breeding barred owl around, like, you're going to know because it's loud.
So if you hear the call, I mean, this night vision monocular is like a really cheap stuff. Like, it's not going to give me that much of an information.
Yeah, I mean, if you hear a barred owl, you would record it as singing.
Mm-hmm. So actually, get recording must be a good way to figure out.
Yeah, you're gonna hear stuff more than you're gonna see anything. You'd be lucky to see something. I think like whippoorwills as well.
But so I can count it as a sighting if I.
Yeah, you can. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's not like there's a lot of stuff out at night, so right. I think it's like it's actually more doable
than during the daytime.
Yeah, because there's not like all this chatter going on.
It's the traffic noise and everything.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll give it a.
Yeah,
shot
you should give it a shot. I mean, in whippoorwills. I mean, they say whippoorwill.
They say their name.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good to know. So that's my actually personal question.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thanks.
Whippoorwill.
The most controversial question of this show, Bequency, has been, what is your favorite local bird? You know, there are apparently two kinds of people. Ones who have favorites, and ones who don't choose favorites. And I think I'm one of those people who have favorites. But I love what Wendy said about Robin, actually, that it's not like they're her favorite birds, but it inspires her to appreciate everything around you. That was her word. And you know, Robin is certainly underappreciated. Like yesterday at the same walk that I mentioned in my first mic break, the walk led by Larry Fetterman in Greene County, during the walk someone said, oh, what's that bird over there? Oh, that was Robin, sorry. And someone responded like, don't apologize. But yeah, you know, when we say, oh, that was Robin, we're not saying anything negative about them, but it's our voice often fails to hide the disappointment in our voices. So still, it's so good for your mental well-being, I think, to be among people and birds and trees and just be reminded to appreciate everything around you. So huge thanks to Wendy Tachi for taking the time to speak with me for this show. I will post all the links on the show notes that will be posted on our website, wgxc.org, along with the archive audio of today's show, the links to the event calendar of the Breeding Bird Atlas and all that stuff. All the bird samples played on this show are from Stokes Field Guide to Bird Songs, Eastern Region. So whippoorwill was a whippoorwill. That was from the samples of the Stokes Field Guide. So, there are several pretty cool releases that recently came out that are bird-inspired, and so I want to play more of them today. We're going to hear a brand new release from Chicago-based percussionist Matt Espy. It is an album of solo drums. It says, In Dialogic Flight with Bird Song, it says here in the release note. Another release that came out early this month from Drag City record label. We're going to hear a track titled Robin-Throated Sparrow, and then another track called Dex Lark. Thanks for listening. This is Bequency on WGXC Radio. We heard some bird inspired by music by Chicago-based percussionist Matt Espy, two tracks from their brand new album, Hawk's Wars, released by Drag City record label. And we'll close my show today with another new release. This one is from, well, by Maxine Funk, an artist from New Zealand. We're going to hear one of her tracks featuring some field recordings, and the track is titled Oblivion. This is from her, again, brand new album, Riverside, which came out at the end of last month from the record label Disciples. Special thanks to Tim Wilson of Unsung Hunger for sharing this release and all the other wonderful new music with us here at WGXC Radio. And that'll be it for my show today. This program has been Bequency, and I've been Mayuko. I will be back on the fourth Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, so the next episode will air on June 24th. I hope you will join me again. You're listening to Waveforms, WGXC Radio. Stay tuned for 24-hour drone live streaming. Waveform is pleased to once again partner with Basilica Hudson to present a live stream and broadcast of 24-hour drone event that's happening right after this show. So stay tuned. Thanks again for listening. I hope to see you next time. Thank you.
Film rolling, susurration. Shadow.